Hi, this is John Floridis. Welcome to Musician Spotlight. Our guest today is the OHM Ensemble. Hi, this is John Floridis. Welcome to Musician Spotlight. I'm very pleased to welcome the members of the OHM Ensemble. How are you guys doing?
Great.
Thanks for having us, John.
Thank you very much for making time to come in and talk shop with us here at Musician Spotlight. Perhaps the thing to do to start the interview off is to maybe have you guys introduce yourselves and then also maybe talk about what instruments you play.
My name is Masato Baba. The primary instrument that I play is taiko. And also the bamboo flute.
My name's Kelvin Underwood, and I play the taiko as well, and drum set, and some other hand percussion.
My name is Chris Bergstrom. I play taiko and a variety of other instruments, some enthusiastically and some reluctantly.
My name is Shoji Kameda. I also play taiko and hand percussion, and also little bamboo flutes, and do some overtone singing or throat singing.
Great. Thank you very much. One of the things I came across on your website was this quote, "Modern Drummer magazine calls the OHM Ensemble an exciting taiko ensemble looking at new ways to apply traditional Japanese drums." Let's maybe start with, for our listeners' sake, what a taiko ensemble is and what that implies. Obviously, it's a drum. It's a type of drum. But
Well, the taiko themselves, the instruments themselves are ancient instruments from and it's used in a variety of traditional music. And there's sort of different styles of traditional music all throughout Japan that will use the taiko. The phenomenon of using the taiko in an all-ensemble setting and making the taiko the focus is actually a recent phenomenon. Started in the 1950s in Japan, and from then sort of spread throughout the world. So now there's these... we call them wadaiko or kumidaiko ensembles all throughout the world. And usually what characterizes these ensembles is there's some choreographed like movement involved. The drums are sort of the focus. And it's a very sort of very dynamic and powerful kind of performance art. And then what we're trying to do is we're taking a smaller sort of music ensemble approach to the art form. So we're much more sort of focused in terms of what the instruments can do musically, and really trying to explore the possibilities of the drums in a little more subtle and musical ways.
Well, an obvious question would be, how did the ensemble come together?
Well, Shoji and I, Masato and Shoji, we grew up playing taiko together. My mom and dad, Russell Baba and Jeannie Mercer, are one of the very first, I guess, first generation of taiko players in America. And they moved up from San Francisco. They play taiko in the San Francisco Taiko Dojo, which is the first taiko group here in America. Shoji and Chris met. Shoji and Chris started talking about starting a taiko group. And then we had our very first concert in Hakodate, Hokkaido, where Chris was living at the time. And the three of us had a fun time trying to start off our group in a foreign land. Kelvin here, he saw us performing at one of the taiko conferences. We have a biannual taiko conference every year. And we performed there, and it seemed to be his calling. And then he went to Berklee College of Music. From there, he kind of wanted to meld both of those to, you know, the traditional kind of taiko, as well as his studies that he was doing in Berklee. So he asked if he could join a group. And now it's the four of us.
Well, it strikes me, I mean, this is a very specific type of art and type of music. You really have to know what you're doing to get into it.
This is Chris. I think Kelvin, of all of us, probably best epitomizes that leap of faith.
I've never really been into doing what other people do. And so when I saw On Ensemble performing at that taiko conference back in 2005, I was really struck by their gall to actually be more musical with the drums, not just bash them like most groups do, which is great. I really like doing that. But, you know, we wanted to have, they had a wider dynamic range, and they had a really interesting way of incorporating dance. And then these things like Shoji was speaking of, the overtone singing and all of these interesting rhythms and ways of getting different tones and textures out of the drums, out of one drum. And so I was like, man, this is cool. I could do that. I've always felt like drums have been the thing that have just led me throughout life, not just for musical situations, but just, you know, other relationships in life. So it's always been something I could count on.
group performs in a broad range of venues, I've noticed, you know, from small, intimate kind of concert settings to festivals, outdoor events, larger, I don't know if arenas, but certainly larger venues. Talk a little bit about how you adapt the performances to the different kinds of spaces.
Well,
it would seem like with instruments as dynamic as these instruments that you're playing, you know, you mentioned the bashing of the drums. Right. If you're in a room of 100 people, I would assume you have to kind of adapt a little bit as to what you're doing.
Yeah, you do. Outdoors, yeah, because, I, you know, when I'm playing drum set, just the timbre of the instrument it is much louder than a taiko. The taiko has calf skin for drum heads, whereas the drum set, you have, like, some form of plastic and maple wood, and they're just constructed differently, so the sound projects more. So outdoors, I can play, I can really lay into the drums and the cymbals, whereas in a smaller room, like last night at the Elks Lodge in Salmon, Idaho, well, I still played loud. But, you know, we still have to play the room, you know. The acoustics are different in every situation. The audience is different. So, like, last night in Salmon, they responded to a lot of subtle things, more so than usual. Hmm. And that kind of dictates the direction that we end up going.
I don't think it really matters to us who's in the audience. We just try to do what we really think represents us best. And our teacher always, our teacher from Hawaii, Kenny Ando, he always said, there's going to be people who love your music and there's going to be people who hate your music. So try to do the best you can every time. And, you know, don't worry about all that stuff, because there's, you know, like you said, there will be people who like it or don't. And mm-hmm. So, you know, we just try to go with what we believe in, and just try to, whoever's there, this is our music. This is who we are.
This is John Floridis. You're listening to Musician Spotlight, and I'm joined today by members of the OWN Ensemble. You bring the music to areas that are probably not going to be exposed to this music on a regular basis. mountain home, Idaho, I noticed in there, you know, with respect to the folks there. I mean, that's probably not something that they're going to be exposed to a lot. And that just seems like a really cool thing to be able to bring something this specific with this kind of history to, you know, parts of the country that are not going to be as familiar with it as, say, San Francisco or right. some of the bigger cities and so forth.
Yeah, I mean, most of us, three of us live in Los Angeles right now, and Calvin lives up in Ashland, Oregon. And I think I could speak for most of us, we really enjoy coming out to these small towns. And, I mean, it's like an adventure, you know? Mm-hmm. Like driving through these beautiful parts of Montana and Idaho that we've been on and just being able to share our music with people that, you know, might not have ever seen taiko before. And then here we are trying to bring this whole taiko fusion thing that needs a whole lot of explanation, you know? And it seems like you can get caught up in a lot of like, oh, you know, gosh, maybe we should tell people what this is or represent this. But if you just play the music that you know and that is honest to you and speaks to you, then people get that. And I think that's been really fantastic.
What Own Ensemble is doing is essentially American. We grew up here in the States being exposed to music of every culture and having the freedom to adopt those things and to try those things and being encouraged to be artists and to be creative and to love one another. And those essential qualities, I think, are really strong in a place like Mountain Home or Salmon. And so I think, along with what Shoji is saying, I think that essence is actually exactly what a lot of people in these smaller communities bring to your concert. They're ready to love it in the same way that we're creating it, I think. Mm-hmm.
There are some really nice photos and stories on your Facebook page, I noticed. including shots of packing up in the van, getting everybody in the van, the board games that are played in between in between the gigs. And then my favorite was hitting the sports bar after the gig, which I thought it's a great little snapshot of you know what life is like besides all the glamour of playing in front of these great audiences and stuff. Talk a little bit about that experience of beyond the actual performing of the music and just being together as four guys traveling around the country in a van.
Well, yeah. That's okay. So that's something I don't know. I'm speaking for myself, but. My dad always told me that, you know, as much as you're serious about your art or your music or whatever it is you're doing, you need to have those moments where you bond with each other. You need to have those moments where you can relax. You need to have those moments, to really, you know, let loose, let the day come to an end. And I don't know what that means. Maybe that means playing video or board games. Maybe it means having a beer. Maybe it means going out and having some pizza together, whatever it is. But, you know, just to really have that moment to be able to appreciate, you know, what you do. And, you know, because I think, you know, as artists, you know, the top priority for us is to practice, you know, and a lot of practice every day and creating. But the pressure of that really gets to you sometimes. So for me, especially, and I'm just speaking for myself, it's nice to have those moments to be able to, you know, sit back and relax and, you know, talk to Shoji about whatever it might be, what he's doing with his daughter today, or Kelvin about what he's been doing up in Ashland, or Chris about his crazy new bocce stick flipping move or something like that. So just have those moments, you know.
Kind of cleanse the palate.
Exactly.
So to speak.
Yeah, exactly.
And we enjoy a very good beer, for sure.
Some of us.
Oh, yeah. Sorry. Everybody except for Chris. So I'm always looking for, like, you know, a good, like, regional, you know, microbrews and that kind of stuff. We get pretty excited about that.
Tried to solicit some questions off of our Facebook page, the Musician Spotlight Facebook page, and I did get one, more lighthearted. One of our listeners made reference to a local, very talented drummer who claims he cannot play without being able to have gum to chew on at the same time. And I wondered, and he wanted to know, listener wanted to know if maybe you guys had any kind of quirks like that, like, you know, like maybe before the show, like rituals maybe that you had to do when performing, or maybe chewing gum. I don't know.
Brushing our teeth?
Well, that's a start. Sure.
Personally, I can't look at my drum or my sticks when I'm concentrating on improvising. So I always play with my eyes closed, and the guys always make fun of me for it.
One thing I do, this is Kelvin speaking. One thing I like to do is just to go out into the seats in the audience and just look at the stage and just imagine, like, from an audience member's perspective, like, what's going to happen? Like, I try to think of what it's like when you first walk into the hall and you see all this stuff and you see the drums, you see the drum set, and you see, okay, the big taiko. But then throughout the show, I'm imagining this person not noticing this little stick type of percussive instrument that Maz starts to play during a song. They're like, whoa, I didn't see that there. Oh, what is that thing? How are they generating that sound? And then all of a sudden seeing the koto, which is a 13-string zither kind of acoustic instrument that Chris plays, and we put electronic effects on it, and they didn't notice it. And all of a sudden they see him back there playing it in this unusual manner. And then hearing the flat acoustic sound in the house, and all of a sudden hearing this electronic effect going on the instrument, and just like, you know, so I like to see the big picture and not really think about all of like what I'm going to do in my drum solo or all these little musical details, but just the overall experience that audience member might have.
This is John Floridis. You're listening to Musician Spotlight, and we're joined today by the OWN Ensemble. OWNEnsemble.org is the website that you can go to find out more about the group, their recordings, their touring, and they also, as we mentioned, have a Facebook presence. CDs are available through CD Baby, for sure, as well as some other outlets. Also, music available on iTunes. Thanks so much for making time to come in and talk shop with us. It's been a pleasure meeting you guys and getting a chance to get your music out to our listeners.
Thank you for having us, John.
Thanks, John. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you.
This is John Floridis. You've been listening to Musician Spotlight. Our guest today has been the OWN Ensemble. If you'd like to contact us, you can do so through the Montana Public Radio website, mtpr.org. You can also find us online at our own website, musicianspotlight.org, as well as Facebook. Our program is now available as a downloadable podcast from those websites as well as from iTunes. Musician Spotlight is a production of Montana Public Radio.